Even as Dr. Colin Patterson, the chief paleontologist of the British Museum, said that he woke up one day and suddenly realized that he had been deceived and deluded into thinking that evolution was a proven fact. And he asked himself one morning, "What do I indeed know about evolution for sure?" Now, this is the chief paleontologist of the British Museum, which has the largest collection of fossils in the world. He said, "Nothing."
This is Global Air Force with your host, Jim Rome.
On today's broadcast, we are honored to have the late Dr. D. James Kennedy as he presents a most provocative message on evolution and you. Facts and truth about evolution that you need to hear. And here he is, Dr. Kennedy.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Evolution and You was my topic for this talk. And my friends, the seeds of secularism, grounded, of course, in evolution, have been and are producing a most pernicious and deadly harvest in America. I read just recently an interesting illustration of that by Dr. Ernest Gordon. Now, Dr. Ernest Gordon is the Dean Emeritus of the Princeton University Chapel. He's also the hero of the bridge over the River Kwai. He was the man who discovered the New Testament and was converted and was used to bring about the conversion of hundreds of other soldiers that were in captivity there. And when the movie was made, all of that was omitted. But he is a great man and a great hero, recently retired as Dean of the Chapel of Princeton University. And he said something which I think illustrates the results of this very, very aptly. Listen to him, Dr. Ernest Gordon. Quote, "During the late 50s, I was invited to address the senior class of an English department in a city high school. When I arrived at the school, the late 50s, I introduced myself to the assistant headmaster, whose office was at the entrance. He guided me to the appropriate lecture hall. 20 years later, I was invited to the same school for the same purpose. I again presented myself to the same office, but it was no longer the habitat of an educator, of the assistant headmaster. It was a command post of police, of the police inspector. Corridors and classrooms were monitored by police officers who reported regularly to the inspector. The reasons given for the change were obvious. Violence, assault, rape, drug-induced madness. I interpret this scene," he says, "as evidence of the end times of a civilization that had once benefited from the Christian worldview, one that had exalted creation and people and provided the ideals essential for an authentic education. I recognize that civilization does not create Christians. However, the community of faith created and still creates the civility that is the evidence of civilization. That demoralized school is the tragic consequence of a society's rejection of the biblical worldview that provided the intellectual dynamic of Western education. What is education but an expression of the prevailing culture?" That is, I think, a very dramatic presentation of the bitter fruit of the materialistic evolutionary view of our time. Now, the Western Christian view of man has always held that man is here for a purpose. The Christian view has been summed up in the Catechism question, what is the chief end of man? To glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. But the evolutionists would not question whether that is the chief end of man or some other end, but would say there is no end or purpose or teleology in any man's life at all. Now, my friends, when you get rid of purpose, you also get rid of meaning, and you get rid of significance. If something has no purpose, what do you do with it? You throw it out. We have seen in the courts in these past three decades four very significant decisions that have ushered us into this secular apocalypse that we are now, which we now find ourselves plunged into. There was, first of all, the decision of the Supreme Court that ruled prayer out of our schools, and then they ruled the Bible out of the schools, and then they ruled the Ten Commandments out of the schools, and now they voted negatively against the balanced treatment of creation along with evolution. So we have seen that banished from the thought of our young people is the idea that they have been created by anyone, that there are any laws or moral absolutes which they should obey. And by the way, in that decision where they ruled against having the Ten Commandments posted on the walls of the schools in Kentucky, in that decision they said, lest looking upon them from day to day, the students should be moved to obey them. Ah, alas and alack, we couldn't have that. And of course, if there is no creator, and we just arose by some spontaneous chance concatenation of amino acids in some primordial slime, if there is no creator, then there is no judge. And if there is no judge, then there is no one to whom we are accountable or responsible. If God is therefore dead or absent from both ends of the process of life, then it is true, my friends, that, as Nietzsche said, anything goes. And that's one of the basic motivations that lies behind the rush to evolutionism. Well, what has 130 or so years finally given to us? It is interesting that at the same time, during the last decade, when America has been rushing through court edicts more and more into evolution, at the same time, the basic pillars of the evolutionary faith have been collapsing all around them. And there are many people that suppose that perhaps the evolutionists really have proved their case. And today, we have evolutionists saying that we don't even have to present evidence anymore. Evolution is a fact. It is not only a fact, it is the most thoroughly proven fact in all of science. Nonsense. Let's look at some of the facts that have come to light just in the last decade. Dr. Crick, who, as you know, was the co-discoverer of DNA, which is the master control of all of our genetic development, and which is also that double helix, that spiral that contains all of our genes, is the most complex molecule known to man. And it is so fantastically complex that Dr. Crick decided to apply probability science analysis to the probability of DNA arising by chance, randomness, and of course the God of evolution is a trinity of matter, chance, and time. And those are the threefold gods of the evolutionist religion. What was the chance of DNA arising by random chance in the entire history of the world, the supposititious history, according to evolutionists, which is supposedly 4.6 billion years? Well, he applied the science of probability to that question, and it turned out that it was zilch. That's not a scientific expression, but it describes it very accurately. He got the message very clearly. And this was so devastating to him that what that said, in very simple language, is that not only could a human being never have evolved naturally and spontaneously in this world, in the entire history of the world, but a single living cell could never have evolved, but beyond that, one single molecule within the nucleus of that cell, the DNA molecule, could never even have evolved naturally in the entire history of the world. All of which says that everything that you and your parents and grandparents and children have and are being taught about how life arose spontaneously in some ancient sea is baloney. And Dr. Crick, being honest enough to accept that, however, being an atheist, he wasn't willing to accept creation, so he invented a whole new theory. And as one scientist said, there are two requirements for inventing evolutionary theories. You should know what they are, two requirements. Now, you might wonder just where one goes to get this great intellectual capacity to do that. But here they are. One, it depends on your ability to weave a tale. And two, it depends upon the credulity of your audience. Well, with both of those in mind, he came up with a doozy. He calls it directed panspermia. And the idea is very simple, that since life could never have risen here naturally, and since there is no God, which he assumes a priori, therefore some advanced race living on some other planet, revolving around some other sun somewhere out there, or maybe it was there, sent spaceships out into space containing their sperm cells, and voila, here you are. Now, that is simply a lengthening of the shadow. A lengthening of the shadow while you remain in the dark of its penumbra. In logic, it is called an infinite regress. And, of course, it is completely without help in solving any problems, as you can see. Because to any thinking person, the question is going to automatically arise, where did that advanced race of people come from? Well, you see, there was this other, more advanced race of people that lived on another planet, and excuse me, sir, where did they come from? Well, you see, there was a much more advanced, and on it goes, until you finally exhaust the credulity of your audience. However, shortly after that, another scientist of equal or greater fame, Sir Fred Hoyle of Cambridge, decided to examine the possibility of a living cell arising spontaneously, not in the 4.6 billion year history of the Earth, but in the entire history of the universe, which keeps changing from year to year, by the way, and roughly 20 billion years on the outside. And so anywhere, here or on that planet or on this one or any place else, anywhere, even to the entire beginning of the universe, one single living cell somewhere. And he applied the science of probability analysis to that and concluded that the chances of that happening were 1 to the 40,000th power. Now, most people are not used to thinking in terms of power, and I realize I have a vast array of scientists here, but I am encouraged by the fact that there is also a larger array of non-scientists and laymen that are present, and for their sake, may I simply say that another evolutionary scientist, Lecomte de Noue, a Swiss scientist, Nobel Prize winner, who is an expert in probability science, said that anything whose probabilities are less than 10 to the 50th power will never happen. And of course, 10 to the 51st power is 10 times that many. And 10 to the 52nd power is 10 times that many. And 10 to the 53rd and 4th and 167th and 2,950. Keep going to 40,000th power. Do you have any idea what that means? Evolutionists like to have a long time for the age of the Earth. Fine. How much would they like? 10,000, not enough. How about 10 billion? 10 trillion. 10 quadrillion, 10 septillion, 10 octillion, 100 million, billion, trillion times 10, whatever. And do you realize that the figure I just gave is not a tiny fraction of 10 to the 40,000th power? All of which very simply is to say that it never, ever happened. And Sir Fred Hoyle of Cambridge, one of the world's leading astronomers and mathematicians, the father of one of the only two widely accepted cosmogonies of this 20th century, the steady state theory, which lost out in the popularity contest with the Big Bang, but nevertheless, to be inventor of such a thing is quite an accomplishment. And he and another mathematician, Chandra Wickramasinghe, did these computations, and they said that to suppose that somewhere on this earth, by purely natural, spontaneous, random causes, that the entire complexity of the living cell, with all of its amazing and unbelievable complexity, that this came into existence by chance, is nonsense of the highest order. Sir Fred Hoyle, what your children are being taught as scientific fact and truth, he says, is nonsense of the highest order. My friends, evolution is dead coming out of the starting gate. They rang the bell, lifted the post, and the horse dropped dead. But if that isn't bad enough, along comes our good friend Stephen Jay Gould, probably our leading American evolutionist today, professor at Harvard University, and being no slouch when it comes to inventing stories and weaving tales, he came up with another one that ought to get an Oscar, I think. At least notable mention in the science fiction awards of the year. He calls it punctuated equilibria. Now, what does he say? He says that species come into existence suddenly and they remain in stasis or the same for long periods of time, maybe millions and millions of years, and then suddenly they cease to exist. Now, how are they connected to other species? Well, he says there is this burst of evolutionary activity, and suddenly something else develops very quickly, which, as Dr. Gish has often been wont to say, is simply the old idea of Goldschmidt, the University of California, which Goldschmidt called hopeful monsters, the idea that a lizard laid an egg and a lizard came out and on and on and on and on until one day a lizard laid an egg and a bird flew away. Now, however, Gould has modified this slightly and said that it took a little bit of time to do this, but then the bird came out very quickly. It all happened sort of over in a valley somewhere, undetected. And I think it's very interesting that we don't find any evidence of this. Now, why is it that we don't find any evidence of these transitional forms? Because, you see, it happened so fast. They didn't leave any trace. But, excuse me, sir, haven't you been saying for 100 years that the reason that we can't see evolution taking place today is that it happens too slowly? Now, let me see if I have this right. The reason that we can't see it happening in the past, in the fossil record, is because it happened too fast. And the reason that we can't see it happening today is because it happens too slow. That's marvelous. And it, I think, an incredible tribute to the credulity of his listeners and his amazing ability to weave what seem to be plausible tales. One of the most damaging results of Darwinism, according to Dr. W.R. Thompson of Canada, who was the head of the National Institute for Biological Control, one of their most outstanding scientist, so much so that he was selected to write the introduction to the centennial edition, 1959, of Darwin's Origin of Species. He was a scientist of that kind of stature. And Dr. W.R. Thompson said that one of the results that accompanied Darwinism was a decline in scientific integrity. And how true that is. We find suddenly the rise of all sorts of fraudulent activities taking place in science. But he said the most damaging thing that it did was that for the first time in the history of science, science had been separated as a result of the followers of Darwin, what finally resulted from it, until we come today, that science is now conceived as totally separated from God, for which was never heard of before in science. Today it's almost accepted as a commonplace that a creator cannot be conceived and tolerated in the whole scientific discussion. In fact, it is true that during the Arkansas debate, one of the people that testified in that Arkansas trial said that he was reading one of the creation science textbooks and threw it into the trash because it referred to a creator. And now suddenly, if there is any reference to God or to a creator, then somehow this has now become unscientific. And science has been redefined as something which excludes God? Well, that raised a very interesting question in my mind. If it mentions a creator, you throw it in the trash. Do you have the ground rules? You understand how this is played? You get a book, and it mentions a creator had anything to do with the creation of the world, you throw the book in the trash. We all understand now how the game is played. Let me read you then the last paragraph of Darwin's Origin of Species. Quote, "There is grandeur in this view of life, with its several powers having been originally breathed by the Creator into a few forms or into one, and that whilst this planet has gone cycling on according to the fixed law of gravity, from so simple a beginning, endless forms, most beautiful and most wonderful, have been and are being evolved." A supposed scientific textbook bringing in, of all things, a creator. Into the trash it goes. But you know, it is encouraging that the truth is getting out, and the number of people becoming interested in and becoming convinced of the scientific evidence for creation is growing at a phenomenal rate. Just since 4 years ago, there has been a tremendous number of more people who have become aware of the truth, that they have been fed fairy tales and that they have been deceived. Even as Dr. Colin Patterson, the chief paleontologist of the British Museum, said that he woke up one day and suddenly realized that he had been deceived and deluded into thinking that evolution was a proven fact. And he asked himself one morning, "What do I indeed know about evolution for sure?" Now, this is the chief paleontologist of the British Museum, which has the largest collection of fossils in the world. He said, "Nothing." And he asked a whole group of evolutionists meeting shortly thereafter at the Field Museum in Chicago, "Can any of you tell me anything that you know for sure about evolution?" Silence. Finally, one man raised his hand. Now, this is a world gathering of evolutionists, and they don't know anything for sure about evolution. Which, of course, is the best proven fact of history, of the history of science. "One thing I'm sure of, Dr. Patterson, we ought not to teach it in high school. We're teaching it in kindergarten. But the truth will out, and I am sure that the day will come when evolution will be recognized to be the pernicious and harmful theory and falsehood and deceit and fairy tale that it really is. And people will realize at length that it is a great and glorious creator, the Almighty, Omniscient God, who has created the world and you and me. May it so be, and may it come soon." Thank you.
Global Air Force wants you. Be a part of the Global Air Force Radio Ministry. Please go to our website at www.globalairforce.net. That's www.globalairforce.net.